Mr. Brown, Rail 6. Mr. Brown, we're talking about the British rations, the combo rations in Italy, and you were saying that was a more kind of basic kind of food. Was there certain contents of the combo ration that were prized more than others when these things were opened out?
Well, the American ones, I just remember the bars of nice thick chocolate and the steak and kidney pies, or puddings as it would be. Can't remember much about the British ones, except they weren't up to that standard.
Now, you say you smoked at this point.
Mm-hmm.
How were you set for cigarettes in the front line?
Always seemed to have some. Of course, they were cheap, you know, when you could buy them, and you got 50 free SU a week as well. So they weren't hard to come by.
Were they important to people?
I think so.
Because, I mean, some veterans have talked about how they were more important than the rations to have the cigarettes.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd go along with that.
Oh, yes, it was important.
So you mentioned how you were pulled back from this attack in Cusino that never happened.
Mm.
And so you mentioned the Garigliano. Could you just describe the run-up to that and what you remember about events leading up to the crushing of that?
Well, I think the initial crossings, by the time we got there, had been made across the Garigliano. I'm not sure about that. But I don't remember having to, well, I know I didn't, have to make an attack across the Garigliano. What I remember is that when we got there, we started walking before first light, when if the chap in front had a white mug on the outside of his little pack, we were all right, you could follow that, but it was narrow tracks, and we wended our way up into the mountains from there, and we must have walked till, well, it was lunchtime, and we stopped and had something to eat, and I'd been carrying the set all morning, because Fitz, you know, seemed small for this job. Anyway, I carried the set all morning, so we were pretty took it out, I think, by lunchtime. But unfortunately, after we'd had a rest, we had to put an attack in. So we didn't get much rest.
And what do you remember about this particular attack?
Too much. What it was that... I suppose you want to hear this. We had to work our way around the side of a mountain which looked down upon a sort of crossroads of valleys. There's a valley right down below, we could see. And the sides of the mountain were all boulders and so on, but there was a small wood that we had to make for before going down and presumably going up the other side again. Well, I remember going round the corner, and not too far along, the leading platoon had come under fire, and that's when I remember seeing Tommy Turnbull walking out saying he was wounded. And at that time I was with Bill Wade and Fitz and the company commander, and also a chap from the support company who was carrying for us spare batteries cables, etc. So it obviously wasn't going to be a short operation. Anyway, we got round and we were behind this boulder and looking down into the valley. There's some huts down in the valley and you could see the Germans running round out of these huts. Obviously the alarm had been raised with this forward platoon. And we tried to get on the set that Bill Wade was carrying the set just then and get some artillery down onto the various areas of where we wanted it. But remember, it wasn't easy to get through on the set, but we struggled. And then when we tried to do that, of course, the Germans were then well aware of what was happening. And of course, the stuff started to come over towards us. I think it must have been mortars plus probably 88s as well. So we had to go along the face of the mountain, which was the wrong side as far as we were concerned. We thought it had been on the other side. And get past this fire that was coming in. Consequently, we were all split up then. And I didn't see the others again. I know Bill Wade was higher up the mountain than I was. I think Fitz was lower down. And the company commander and this chap from support company must have been somewhere around. And we were trying to make our way along to this wood. And I remember stopping in front of a boulder and getting behind it. And there was an almighty bang. And I peeped round the side and there was a smoking hole just in front of the boulder. And I thought, well, I'd better get out of here. And, on a mountainside you get little 6 inches or so, little ridges where you imagine sheep or something walking along. And I started along this and went full length. And being still reasonably innocent, I thought, oh, they probably think I'm dead or something, or they've caught me with this shell. But then I felt bullets going into the ground beneath the stomach, and something must have stone jumped up and hit me on the back of the leg. And I thought, well, it's best not to stay here any longer. So I made it from there straight into the wood. And I thought I was quite safe in the wood. And I started shouting for Bill Wade with the set. And he was higher up, as I said. And I said, oh, okay, And just then I saw that the small tree, more than 6 inches across the trunk, and it was being stripped. And I thought, oh, this bloke, somebody who really wants to try and get me, it was just stripping down. I thought, good heavens. So I went a bit further into the wood and shouted to Bill Wade again. I said, are you all right? He said, no, I'm wounded. I'm wounded in the ankle. He said, I better come up and get the set. And just at that minute, there was a rush through the wood. And I thought, we're being attacked through here. But it wasn't the Germans coming through. It was our forward platoons coming out. Not a happy situation. And we started running all together up the hill to get out altogether. Retreat in the army, terrible. Anyway, we stopped part the way up. And there's a sergeant just next to me. And he stood up and shouted, come on, lads, you know, let's get out. And we stood up and started running. And with the hill, you know, he was a little above me. And I saw little holes appearing in the back of his head. And I thought, oh my God, you know, this is it. But that sort of fear lends you wings. I don't think I've ever run up a hill as fast as that. And we got over the top, and it turned out that the four of us, Bill Wade was wounded, never saw him again. The lad from support company had caught a shell, he was killed. And we presumed later that Fitz had been captured. And anyway, I got out, and I don't know how many in the company at that time, 100, 120, but there just seemed to be about 30 or 40 left. And we pulled back and then stopped and started to reorganise. And I was told to get back to battalion headquarters, which I did. And had to replace me and the others at B Company with, you know, to keep the signals going. And I went back to this place. And I remember, you know, we were just on the hillside, and I must have been, I talked to the signal officer, of course, about the experiences, what had happened. And darkness comes pretty soon. That would be the end of January, I should think. And I was lying, I must have been dead out of the world, because I remember waking up partly and the adjutant was kicking me because it'd been a stand to. And they wanted people up on their feet. I heard him shout to the signal officer, "What's the matter with this man? Is he dead?" And the Harris said, "Oh, he's back from B Company." Everything went quiet after that, and I just slept on. So that was my memories of across the Garigliano.
Now, thinking about that, you know, years later, do you think the fact that you suffered so many casualties was the result of simply having to attack this particular objective? Or was it something that you could have done differently, you know, tactically? I mean, was it like do you think it was like an ambush, or was it just a fact of war that if you attack an objective, you suffer casualties?
Well, I thought it wasn't the best time in the middle of the day to be going down the front face of a mountainside to try and go up the other side. I would have thought it would have been better if it could have been done at some other time when we weren't so visible. Now, I don't know the tactics, because only the company commander could do that. And he left the battalion after that action. So we couldn't talk to him about it. And in fact, I wasn't in a position to talk to him about it. But it seemed to me that possibly something had gone wrong somewhere.
Now, you've mentioned that at one point in the action you were trying to bring artillery fire down on the Germans. Was there a kind of problem in the communication as a result of the radios, and that you couldn't manage to get this done?
Yes, I remember we had difficulty getting through, and that was probably because of the mountain terrain.
So if you had gotten through, could the situation have been turned with artillery support?
It could have been helped an awful lot, yes, I should think so. I don't know if any artillery did get through or didn't, because we weren't in a position to see.
So in terms of with the rifle company of B Company, there would be the forward platoon, and you've mentioned Tom Turnbull, and then there would be the company commander and the radios. and then the other platoons?
Well, probably you've got three platoons in the company, and if you're putting an attack, it might be one platoon or two platoons, but presumably you would have two platoons, you'd have the company commander, and you'd have a platoon in reserve just to fill in the gaps. I mean, it probably was all straightforward. It just unfortunate that these things happen in wartime.
As the action was unfolding, when you're trying to get the artillery support, did you sense that this thing was going wrong at this point?
No,
you didn't.
No,
it was only when the whole.
Yeah, when it seemed we were.
When the others pretended to
be. It's all right watching it on films where you've got the people among the boulders shooting at each other. But, when the Germans can see you and you're sort of trying to get away from their fire, you can try and look round to see where the fire's coming from, but it's not so easy as somebody seeing you walking down the front of a mountain.
Now, you mentioned, again, the man from support company with the spare batteries and so on. About how long would this radio last, with its battery supply? How much work would you get out of it?
I can't remember now. I don't know how long the batteries lasted, to be honest, now.
But not a long period, or they wouldn't.
Or they wouldn't need replacements.
Yeah, yeah. So, you mentioned Captain Harris. Mm. Was that your first encounter with Captain Harris?
Well, no, my first encounter would be when I first joined the battalion, mm. Because he was the signal officer then, and that would be there, although I can't remember him very much at that time.
What was his style as an officer then, do you think?
He's quite relaxed, really. If you did things wrong, I suppose you got into trouble for it, but there didn't seem to be the discipline that you expect or you got when you first joined the army. It seemed a more relaxed type of discipline, at least in the signal platoon.
What kind of things could you get wrong that you would get into trouble for?
I don't know that anybody did really get into trouble. I suppose if you did something wrong, you would get into trouble. But no, I can't remember anybody really getting into trouble from that point of view.
Now, just backtracking a little bit, but the battalion history talks about Christmas being delayed in 1943 and celebrating Christmas, at the end of, like a week. This is like going a little bit back before that. Do you remember anything about that? Christmas celebrations?
No, I don't. No, it would be, I think it would be after Christmas when B Company was in this copse, at the bottom of the hill. That must have been after Christmas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't remember Christmas much at all, mm-hmm. or at all.
Other veterans have talked about one of the problems being in Italy that the Germans always commanded.
That was the trouble. Yeah. Whenever you moved up, this wasn't so noticeable until the Gothic line. And then it was hill after hill after hill. And when you got to where the Germans had been, you thought, well, what an easy task they had looking down all the time at the people coming up and around. That's when it became very noticeable.
Did morale suffer because of that? In terms of, seeing an end to it is what I'm getting at. If it was just one hill after another, how did people start to feel about the Italian campaign?
Well, we're talking about later now, aren't we? After the Gugliano and after we were taken out and went to the Middle East. And then we came back to the Gothic line, and that's when the hills started.
So at this stage, could we say that people were still fairly optimistic about being able to push the Germans up through?
Well, I got that, you know, I seem to get that impression. But,
did you ever encounter any of the German propaganda, the leaflets and so on that they were?
No, I don't remember getting any of those. Maybe there were some floating around.
And on a similar tack, apparently the Allies would be dropping leaflets that would like save passage for the Germans to come through to the Allied lines. Do you remember?
No. The memory plays tricks, you know. You seem to remember leaflets floating out of planes, but no, I wouldn't be definite about any of that.
Can you remember your first encounter with a German prisoner? Was this meeting the Germans face to face?
I didn't encounter any. No, I didn't encounter any German prisoners, fortunately. Well, that wouldn't have made any difference then, would it? No.
What was your impression of the German as soldiers? What was the general opinion within the battalion of the German army?
Oh, the general opinion was very good, that he was a very good soldier.
And in terms of their equipment versus the British Army's equipment, was there any aspect of their weaponry that people envied? That
No, they had P-42s and Schmeissers, weren't they? And they seemed to fire amazingly fast. But whether they jammed more or heated up more or performed better at length than just short, sharp bursts, I wouldn't know.
And in terms of the British equipment, I think you mentioned earlier, the Tommy gun. Mm. You've been issued with a Tommy gun by this stage.
Yes.
And what do you think of that as a weapon?
It's fine for a close range weapon, but of course it hasn't got the range of a rifle. You know, it's no good at 400 yards or anything like that. It's a close range weapon.
And was that the general opinion of people, that it wasn't much good for anything other than?
Yes.
Now, you mentioned Big Company, very heavy casualties that Big Company suffered at this point. Mm. Now, just, you know, a few weeks earlier, you'd been a new replacement in the battalion. Now, obviously, new men were coming through, joining the battalion all the time. Mm. Did you feel like a veteran by this point? I mean, when you saw these new men coming through, or what did you feel about them? And was there kind of advice that you would give, or anything going on like that?
Not really. I didn't think I'd been there long enough to start giving advice, I must admit. But it meant, you know, you weren't the biggest rookie in the battalion. That was about it.
So after this action, you were at headquarters company, still in the signals platoon. What were your duties there? How were they different, or how were they the same as with?
Well, at the Grigliano, when I came back to battalion headquarters, and you were in what we call sangers. You couldn't dig in where we were across the Grigliano in the mountains. You had to build sangers, which were just against a slope. You build round these stones just to make a sort of pit. And there was you couldn't call it a signal office, but we had a little exchange set up and lines out to the various companies from this little well, you would call it an office, but what you would call it, you know, a little building like that, a handmade effort against a mountainside, I don't know. But it was manning that and so on.
And that was with the fixed telephone lines?
Yes.
Now, apparently they were prone to being cut by artillery fire and so on.
Yeah.
Did that happen to obviously, at this stage, I mean, would you have to be guard and repair these things periodically?
Yes, yes. And, you know, talking about fear, that was one of the things that if you went out at night to look for a break in the line, it wasn't very pleasant at all, because there were stories that the Germans would cut a line and tie it together without actually tying the wires together. And of course, when you went along at night, you had the wire in your hand, and you know, you kept tugging it and pulling and working along. And of course, when they started pulling the wire towards you and there was no tug on it, you knew you'd found a break. And consequently, when the wires were tied together in that fashion, you didn't feel the break. So a couple of people got captured because of that.
And would that be something that you would assume that they'd just disappear, they wouldn't come back? And then you would...
That was before my time when they were captured, or when I was told they were captured, and they just wouldn't come back.
In terms of casualties generally, you mentioned Wade and never seeing this man again.
Mm.
Would that be normal, that if somebody was a casualty, if he was wounded or whatever, that you literally just wouldn't know what had happened to a lot of people?
Yes.
And there was, yeah. And would I suppose in a lot of cases there wouldn't be any resolution of that until well after the war, when you found out what had happened.
Quite.
Now, during this phase, before you know the battalion was pulled out and went to the Middle East, were you ever troubled by German infiltration? You know, German patrols coming.
No, not across the Giuliano there. No. Mm.
And what about British patrols into their lines? Would they ever require a radio, or would they always just go very lightly equipped?
I can't remember a signaller with a radio going on a patrol like that.
Now, in terms of equipment, it was still the same set that you were trained on back in England. Mm-hmm. It was still the same big set.
Yes.
Now, in terms of the new men coming into the battalion, apparently you had a lot of Welsh new additions, and you know, people from all parts.
Oh yes, yes.
How did they cope with? I mean, you were a north, you know, from the northeast, mm-hmm. originally.
Yeah.
How do you think the people from Wales and you know from Scotland and from all over the place that you had coming into the battalion at this time?
Well, I suppose they're the same as us. You know, they might have expected a lot of Geordies, but there weren't, you know, a preponderance of Geordies. So I suppose they'd be surprised, the same as I was, that there weren't more. And consequently, probably they fitted in better because, you know, they didn't have to break into a solid group of Geordies who they might have felt were ganging together.
Now, in terms of, you mentioned Lieutenant Harris, your signals officer. What about your signal sergeants? What do you remember about them at this time?
I just remember they were very good. They you know, Sergeant Thompson, and I think Billington was a Lance Sergeant, but they seemed quite efficient, and, you know, they weren't overbearing. As I say, the discipline was much more relaxed than I think I expected.
In what ways was it relaxed? What was relaxed?
Well, they didn't shout at you all the time, you know, to get on parade and do this and do that and do the other. They treated you more like human beings, I think, than the training sergeants were possibly allowed to do, so that it was quite okay.
What about in the front line? Was things like shaved? Was that insisted upon? You know, the morning shave, or could you get away with growing a bit of a beard?
Not insisted on. You shaved if you could.
And after this, you know, period in action, when you were pulled back,